Tonight's shiur and every shiur throughout the summer is sponsored by friends of Ben and Yael England. It was chusar for Shlema for Zacharia Kalman Ben Yael Margalit. We started Pasakum two nights ago. Someone actually emailed me today and said, "Did you take down the Pasakum shiur? I can't find it." I said, "It's okay if you can't find it. Don't listen to it." I didn't know anything when I was saying that shiur. As I mentioned last time, I was just reading through the sugya with you. I hadn't really had any time to formulate how to best attack the sugya of Pasakum. So I'm not going to tell you to forget everything we learned two nights ago. It's good to remember everything we learned two nights ago. But I was a little disappointed in myself and how it came out in terms of there was very little clarity at the end. It was just a whole bunch of open-ended questions. It's not the way I'm trained to do things. So let's try to think in a much clearer way tonight, hopefully. And basically, I think with the following hakdama, I think it will help frame the sugya very well. And that is that there are three primary questions that we need to think about as we go through the Gemaras and the Rishonim on the sugya. And in the halacha, when it comes to passing halacha, three primary issues. They're not all questions, three primary issues that need to be dealt with. One issue is, we have to try to figure out, according to Talmud Bavli, was there ever a bitul gzeira? Right? Was there or was there not a bitul gzeira? Did they ever take away the gzeira of Pasakum? Right? Just to recap for those who aren't here, the Mishnah says that they did make an iser that you're not allowed to have bread from a non-Jew, and then the Gemara was very, very vague about whether or not they ever took away that gzeira. There are several potential proofs that it was taken away, several potential proofs that it was not taken away. Just to quickly run through them, the proofs that it was not rescinded and that the Isser still stands, according to Talmud Bavli, is first of all, the Gemara starts off by saying that lo hutra bebezdin, that pas akum, unlike, right, it says Amar Avkan Amar Biyochron, pas lo hutra bebezdin. It's a pretty definitive statement, not that we don't know, but that we know it was not hutra bebezdin. The Gemara then, a few lines later, says that someone once thought it was hutar, vilohi. So the Gemara is very clear, very straightforward, that it was not hutar, that at least someone holds that there was never a bezdin that was matir. That's one basic raya, that they were never matir this gezeira. The Yisra still stands. Another basic raya is the story the Gemara tells at the end with Rav's father, Ivo, however you want to say it, that he had some sort of pas akum, and they said, we can't learn from him anymore, that we can't listen to his Torah anymore because he had pas akum. Makes it sound like pas akum is still something very bad. A third possible raya is that if we know who was matir the gzeira of Shemen, Rebbe Ubezdina was matir Shemen, or you have to figure out who exactly was matir the Shemen. But the Mishnah says that Rebbe and Bezdina was matir the Shemen, and one would imagine that if pas was hutar, it would have been sometime around that tkufa. Yet Rebbe's own grandson never even heard of anyone ever being matir the Shemen. He thought it was a good idea, but he never of pas rather, but he never heard of anyone being matir the pas. So as far as Rebbe's grandson was concerned, on Rebbe Yehuda Nasi on Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, pas was never hutar. No one ever was matir pas. Another reason to believe that the Isra still stands is that we simply don't know of a Beis Din that ever took away the Isser. We don't have a record of it. By Shemen, it's clear. Rebbe Ubezdino. We know who did it. We can pinpoint the time, the place, the people. We know exactly what we're dealing with. But in the absence of any proof that anyone was ever matir it, it's a big chiddush to say, oh yeah, someone must have gotten rid of that gezeira. You can't just make up stories in history to say that someone got rid of it. So those are again, none of them are strong proofs because there's answers to every single one of them, but those are the elements of Talmud Bavli, of our sugya, that lead you to believe that it was not rescinded. There are also elements of the Gemara that lead you to believe that it was rescinded. Number one, the Gemara at the end starts making distinctions according to the opinion that Pasakum is hutar. So, well, that's only if it's a palter. That's only if it was made by a baker. And that's only if it's besada. So what do you mean, that's only? Who says that? Is there anybody that says that? The Gemara seems to be assuming that there is somebody that says that it was rescinded, and it's just dealing with the details. who is it about, right? In what situations did they take it back? What situations did they not take it back? Also, in the story with Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, he thought it was logical and a good idea to uproot it. So if Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya was willing to go on record saying that I would do it if it wouldn't ruin my reputation, but I think it's a great idea, and for anyone else who hasn't already been matir something major in their lifetimes, you know, that would be great for them. It's a great thing to do. Chances are someone probably stepped up to the plate after that and said, hey, if he thought it was a good idea and it's not going to ruin my reputation, I might as well do it. So that's another, again, hint from the Gemara that seems to assume that it was Hutar. And as we mentioned last time, the biggest hint from the Gemara, or not from the Gemara, but that the Rishonim give you, that seems to assume that it was, that at some point they were Matya, this Gezeira, is the fact that all the Rishonim talk about a Minag Yisrael, that everyone was just eating Pasakum. So if people all over the place are eating Pasakum, there must have been something. People wouldn't just, you know, at some point just decide we're not going to observe a Halacha anymore. There must have been something that was done at some point. So that's issue number one. Was it taken away? Was it not taken away? And within that issue, we also have to figure out, as the Gemara alludes to, even if it is taken away, it doesn't mean it's taken away completely. It could be partially taken away. Elements of the Gezerah were strong and they kept. Other elements of the Gezerah were not so strong and they didn't keep. Second issue is, if the Gezerah was rescinded in some way, so what were the mechanics of that Bitul Gezerah? How did they make a gzerah go away? How does one make a gzerah disappear? So there are two basic ideas that we have. One idea is that there's a Beis Din that came and was mevatalit, that just like a Beis Din came and created the gzerah, a later Beis Din came and was mevatal the gzerah. The other possibility is that it was the initial gzerah, we found a flaw in the initial gzerah to render it useless. Therefore, we don't even need a Beis Din to come be matir it because it's totally useless to begin with. And that's generally lo nispashe disuro. When we say that the Isser was never widely accepted, usually that means it turned out that it was a gzera that Rov HaTzibur was not yochel amudbo. People couldn't observe, people weren't up to it, and therefore, mimela, the gzera goes away. Now, again, within that, you have to figure out, is it, what if it's partially lo nispashe? What if elements of the gzeirah? What if they make a gzeirah? You can't have pasakum, and people observe certain elements of that gzeirah, not other elements. They stay away, they manage to stay away from paspal abayis, but not from paspalter. So do we say that the whole gzeirah is ruined? Or that, no, parts of the gzeirah are ruined, other parts can still be in play. But there are major nafkaminas, obviously, if it was rescinded, or if it was lo nispashe disuro. The most obvious nafkamina is pashupshat is if it's lo nispashe disuro, the whole gzera was invalid and everything goes away. The whole gzera would disappear. If it was rescinded, so then they likely just took back the parts that weren't working, but they left the parts that were working. Meaning there's much more reason to be mechalik between paspal abayis and paspalter if you assume that a later Beis Din came along and took back the Gezerah, because the later Beis Din would say, well, let's analyze this. Why should we totally erase a Gezerah that's partially working? We'll just tinker with it. We'll keep the parts that are working in place. The parts that aren't working, we'll get rid of those. But if it was just Lo Nispashe Disuro, and therefore it just didn't work, so then the whole Gezerah should go away. That's issue number two. The third issue is this idea that when you have a Palter, when you have Sadeh, right, that it's going to be mutter in some way, that you don't have to worry about pasakum if it's from a baker or if it's out in the field. So we discussed this a little bit last time also, but again, just to clarify, by each of these heterim, we have to figure out what the mechanics of the heter are. Is it that the gzera was made mishum chasnus? The gzera was made because we were afraid that it was going to lead to intermarriage. And as we said last time, intermarriage doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to marry the guy's daughter because I think he makes such good bread. It means because he makes such good bread, I'm going to want to talk to him a lot more, I want to socialize, and the more we assimilate, the higher the intermarriage rates go. That's Jewish history, right? That's pashut. The more we assimilate, the more we intermarry. You know, no greater, you don't need any greater proof than 21st century America. That's just a davar pashut, right? So the question is, when we say that these things are mutter, palter is mutter, sad is mutter, is it because the chacham determined that there's no concern of chasnos in those situations? There's no concern you're going to come to marry them in those situations? Or maybe no. Maybe there is a concern of chasnos, But we also have a concept that the Rabbanan are going to be so overbearing on the people, and the Rabbanan did not intend their gzeros for major shasat chak. And the Yerushalmi coins a phrase called chaye nefesh, which needs a little further defining also, exactly what chaye nefesh means. But the Yerushalmi coins this phrase, which seems to assume that chaslus may very well still be a concern. But because it's so necessary, we need the bread. We need bread. You can't live without bread. So because of that, they were willing to do away with the gzera under certain circumstances also. So within each heter, we're going to find, we have to figure out, is the yisod heter that there's no concern of chasnus in this case? Or is the yisod of the heter, not that there's no concern of chasnus, there's still a concern of chasnus, but chaya nefesh. So you can have very clear ideas just from looking at Palter Sada. One seems more one way, one seems more the other way. But we have to see if we can have a clear definition when it comes to that. Just to illustrate that point, what if a Jew owns the dough? I make a dough, I knead the dough, I prepare it, I braid it to make a challah, and I give it to the guy, and the guy sticks in the oven. So is that pasakum? Is that not pasakum?
It depends on the concern of chasmus. If there's concern of chasmus, then it doesn't matter who baked it. It might still be pas yehudi, but if we're all scared of chasmus and we're trying to avoid chasmus, then if the guy's giving it to you, that's going to cause chasmus. So,
meaning, bottom line is, he's baking it, I'm having something to do with him over here in the baking of the bread, so that would be included in the gzera.
The Jew baked it or the guy baked it?
The guy baked it.
The guy baked it. So, even if the Jew baked it, gave it to a guy, and the guy gave it to you, if the concern is chasnus, then it's still chasnus. Even though it's...
Oh, so you're saying, even forgetting that, right, we should talk about that also, right? What if you get it from a guy? The guy didn't bake it, you get it from a guy. So let's take that case first. Right, so if it's a concern of chasnus, so l'chora one would imagine that would still be a concern over here, right? But what were you gonna say? What's the other side?
From that case, but maybe the fact that it's called pas Yisrael, then there's no problem.
Okay. So just how formal is the gzera, and how much is it about chasnus?
I guess it also determines now what we define chasnus fully. What causes chasnus?
What counts as chasnus?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Hold that. Yeah.
It's pas Yisrael. It's pas Yisrael, but a Jew made it, but a Jew gave to you.
But again, what's the lumdus of it? You're right. There could be very
midin baking, or is it midin giving? Meaning, can a non-Jew bake it, give it to a Jew, and a Jew gives it to somebody else, like third party? Or is it that, is it midin giving or midin baking it? And what's Isser?
Why?
Why? Because of chasnus. Meaning, if it's midin baking, because it's more than chasnus, it's also chayin nefesh, and there's problems with baking it, I would say.
So let's think in terms of chayin nefesh versus chasnus. If the issue is that it's just necessary in order to survive, you need it in order to survive. So think about this for a second. Why do I need the guy? If the guy is making the bread, why do I need him in order to survive?
To just give you the bread.
Because I can't make bread, right? But if I'm cutting the wheat, making the flour, kneading the dough, braiding it, and giving it to the guy, and what's he doing?
Putting it in the oven.
So how badly do I need him?
Not at all.
Not at all. So you can say that's chayin nefesh. Well, no, you have work. I'll tell you why he'd be doing that. You have Jewish-owned bakeries all the time. Jewish-owned bakeries that employ non-Jews. So I run a big bakery and I sell. I ship to supermarkets throughout the East Coast. I have to make a lot of challahs out of shops. I'm not going to do it all myself. So I own the bakery. I'll take care of it and I'll make the and he'll stick it in the oven for me.
Case?
Yeah, no.
That it's mother. So if you
do
any part of it, that's...
Any part of what,
any
though?
Any part of...
The Gemara Lama Ches identifies three... Things, right.
And Tosos says...
Yeah, and what are the three?
Either Lisha, I think.
No.
No.
Firing up the oven, right, is one of them. Putting it in the oven is another. What's the third one? You remember?
Turning it over or something?
What?
Turning it over.
Something like that. But all of those are about the actual baking. What about the preparation for baking? What about all the legwork in advance? And la halacha we paskin for Ashkenazim at least that you throw in a you throw in a piece of wood and that's good enough. You don't even need to put all the stuff in the oven. So if it's a din chay nefesh in the case where it's owned by a Jew and the Jew prepared everything, it's just the guy that's sticking it into the oven. If it's chay nefesh, it's hard to say that would be a heter mishum chay nefesh. If it's a din, but when you're thinking in terms of chasnus, you still have this by chasnus, to the contrary, you could say that I don't need him. There's not going to be any chasnus. I'm not really connecting to him in such a way. Yeah.
How do we say that it's chasnus versus chay nefesh? Chasnus is a reason why it's usher.
No, you're right. But okay, good. What I'm saying by chasnus versus chay nefesh, I'm saying is the heter because we're not concerned for chasnus in certain cases. Like Palter, he's a baker. He's a professional baker. So if the heter of the baker is that I'm not worried about marrying the baker, he's just doing this for a living. It's not a social interaction. He's doing it because this is what he does for a living. So if that's the case, then you still have no concern of chasnus when it's a baker that's just putting it into the oven for you and you're doing all the preparation. You still wouldn't be concerned about chasnus, and therefore it should still be mutter. But if your whole heter is based on chayin nefesh, you don't have that heter anymore. If you're doing all the work. Because you don't need him. You could have done it yourself. You could have thrown a splinter in the oven and therefore contributed to the fire. So you're right. I'm not being clear by that. When I say chasnus, I mean a lack of concern of chasnus. Not needing to be concerned about chasnus because he's a palter. Or because of sada, whatever that means, which we'll also have to get to. Yeah?
What we said before about with the whole baking, who puts it in, who does the whole thing, then that's going on the assumption, I guess, of we're taking the rules from Chalav Akum and sticking it to here.
But not necessarily Chalav Akum, maybe Bishul Akum.
Bishul Akum or something.
Some rules, okay.
We talked about Bishul last year, the Mavi Pram of Bishul, which we never...
Okay, no, we're assuming that we're dealing with the kind of food that's pas, so it's not going to run by the rules of Bishul Akum.
But the whole issue of chasnus, there's no problem of anything wrong with the ingredients of bread. So it doesn't matter who's putting it in the oven, who's baking it, whatever. Chasnus would mean who's giving it to you. Meaning that we got to figure out what is...
Yeah, and it's a palter giving it to you over here. The non-Jew sticking it in the oven is a palter. He's a baker. And I'm assuming now you have such a heter called palter, which the Gemara says at the end, according to one day. It's not clear in the Gemara that we pass in that way, but let's assume that there is such a heter. Okay, that's just the basic... That's how I wanted to frame the sugya. Three issues. First of all, do we have proof whether the Gemara ever retracted this gezeira or not? The Yerushalmi is explicit that it was retracted at least partially, right? But do we have proof from the Gemara whether it was retracted or not? Issue number two, if it was batel, was it batel because it just was never nispashet and therefore the gezeira was invalid to begin with? Or is it batel because some bezin came along and were actually mevatelit? And number three, when you're dealing with the heterim of basada and the heterim of a palter, are those heterim because we're no longer concerned about chasnus? Or are those heterim because even though we are concerned about chasnus, you still have a major tzorech? There's still a major need. It's chayin nefesh, and that's why we need it. Okay, so next step is, let's see how the Rishonim deal with it. How do the Rishonim understand our Gemara? So we saw last time two of three opinions in the Ritva. So basically what we're going to outline in the Rishonim is the sheet of the Ritva, the sheet of the Ran, and the sheet of Tosfos with two offshoots from the sheet of Tosfos, namely the Ran and the Rush, which say similar things but not exactly the same thing as Tosfos. And then once we get through the Rishonim, we'll be able to determine how we actually pass the halacha by looking at the Shulchan Aruch and seeing which Rishonim we think the Shulchan Aruch is actually using at each stage. So first Shita is the Ritva. We started the Ritva last time, but let's take another careful look at the Ritva. The Ritva is source number 6 in the Mar Makamos. He starts out with two kashas. Kasha number 1, the Gemara sounds like it's about to prove on Lamed Hei Beis that there is such an idea that Pas Akum was rescinded, and then the Gemara never proves it. The Gemara never quotes a single person that says that it was rescinded. So that's Kasha number 1. That's just strange. Kasha number 2, the Gemara says, Beferish Vilohi, Lohi Terebi Asapas. So not only does it not prove that it was rescinded, it in fact proves that it wasn't rescinded. So it's a double, it's really build, one kasha builds off the other. The kasha is, not only didn't you prove what you wanted to prove, you proved the exact opposite of what you wanted to prove. You wanted to prove that we were mevatel the gzeira. Not only did you not prove that, you proved that we were obviously not mevatel the gzeira. So the first day of the Ritva says that, okay, change your girsa. Always one word. All you need to do is change one word in the Gemara and everything changes, right? If you take one word out of the SRS Libros, it's not los yirtzach, it's yirtzach. The whole thing changes. All of a sudden, it's right. Everything changes the whole world. So he says, change one word in the Gemara. All you need to do is add in, instead of the Gemara saying at the beginning, Mechlal di kaman deshari, that the implication is that someone holds its mutter, and then we quote these stories to prove that someone holds its mutter. No, Mechlal di kaman desavar deshari. That there was someone that once held that it was mutter, that once thought that it was mutter. The word desavar implies thought and now knows better. That someone thought this and is wrong. So the Gemara then proves, yes, we know about the guy who thought that, and tells you stories of people who followed Rebbe, thought Rebbe was Matir, and it turned out that they were dead wrong, and the Gemara was able to say, Lohi, absolutely not, Rebbe was never Matir the Pas. That is day number one in the Ritva. Yeah.
What's the read that says, V'amai in the Chiyosa?
Where are you?
This is the third line in the Marma Gomes.
V'amai in the Chiyosa, yeah.
So what's the read of the Gemara? What's the read of the Ritva?
Yeah, so he's reading it that there's someone that holds that thought that Shoryua based in Vamai. So why would they think that in? Yeah, because of the following story that I'm about to tell you, the Chiyaso, the story with Rabbi. Yeah.
Is that all true that when it says in the Gemara, let's say Savar, it means that he thought it, but it's going to be rejected? Mar Savar, this it's usually not.
Right, but in that context, meaning the Ika Manda Savar. Okay, I hear that. Right, Ikaman discovered to show you are based in could also mean
like
that there is someone that holds that way. But at least when you have that word, it can be read this way also. If you don't have that word, Ikaman Deshari, there's no other way to read it. Then you have to hold that there's an opinion that actually holds that it's mutter. Once you put in the word discover, at least it makes it a viable approach to say that there's no real opinion that holds it's mutter. There was someone who once thought at a Havamina that it was mutter. We disproved them and they're out of the game now. Right, they've been outvoted. Good, that's approach number one in the Ritva. Approach number two in the Ritva, he quotes Yeshmei Rabosei. Now, let's take a look at this inside. This is one we skipped last time. It's about 5-6 lines into the Ritva. He writes, Yeshmei Rabosei Omer, ki be'emes ein lanu heter bepashal nachrum klal mitof divrei Rebbe. If you're going to look in the Gemara, v'lezar lam rehem beis, and try to find a heter for Pasakum, anyone who holds a Pasakum is mutter, you will come up empty. Nobody in our Gemara holds that way. And I'll prove to you that no one held that way, because they said to Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, right, the Rebbe's grandson, they said to him, you know, you think we can ever be Matir Pas in your lifetime? So it sounded like no one knew of anybody that was ever Matir Pas, that they had not yet been Matirit. So says the Ritva, you could look, you could turn your Gemara sideways, upside down. You're not going to find anyone in Talmud Bavli that says that they were Matir Pasakum. You know where you'll find it? Talmud Yerushalmi. And it's explicit in the Talmud Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says, Shom Shenimnu Lav Achronim Vihitiru Mishum Chaye Nefesh. Yerushalmi says they were Matir Pasakum because of Chaye Nefesh. Only problem the Ritva is going to face now is, again, what's everybody struggling with? The real thing everybody's struggling with is that people eat it. So what are we relying on? Right? So he says, okay, so now we're in trouble. We have Yerushalmi against the Bavli. If we had at least some opinion in the Bavli that held that it was okay, so maybe you could say we pass like that Shita. But you have Yerushalmi against the Bavli, and we know the rule is Yerushalmi against the Bavli, we always pass like the Bavli. So what in the world would motivate us to pass like the Yerushalmi over here? So the Ritva employs a term that the Talmud Bavli uses in other places, and he adapts it to this discussion. And he says as follows. Kivan da halacha rofefesi, ugzeira shein rova tzibur yicholun lamod ba, kidayua Yerushalmi bazel lismoch alav. Now, he used three phrases that come up throughout Shas in different contexts. He can't mean them all in their technical usage. The hardest part of this line of the Ritva is to figure out which words does he mean, which of those three phrases does he mean in the normal technical way it's used throughout Shas. And when is he just using it as an? Which ones is he just using as an expression? What are the three phrases? Halacha rofefesi, rofefesi biyadenu, that we become weakened in this area, usually means less knowledgeable, in a certain area. Gzeira shein rov tzibur yichol lamaba. We know what that means. Gzeira shein rov tzibur yichol lamaba means that the gzeira is flawed, is essentially flawed, because the Rabbanan do not have a right to make a gzeira that we can't withstand. And if we can't withstand it, the gzeira is flawed. So the gzeira doesn't begin. Kedai hu Yerushalmi bazel lismoch alav. What's that phrase? No, anyone know that phrase? Usually not with Yerushalmi. But the Gemara says, Kedai hu Rabbi Shimon lismoch alav b'shas hadchak. And what that essentially means is, normally you have a machlokas, let's say, the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon. Who are you going to paskan like? Standard klal ha'psak. If it's Chachamim versus Rabbi Shimon, I'm not giving you a topic, just knowing the names. Right, the rabbi. Kedayu Rabbi Shimon lismoch alav b'shas hadchak. But b'shas hadchak, we're going to rely on the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. We'll rely, what that basically tells you, after Rabbi Shimon, it's just that's how the Gemara uses it, but what it tells you is, there are rules of psak, but part of Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim, although typically Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim is not a rule in halacha, it's a rule in Torah, in what's included in Torah, like we mentioned last time, that learning the sheet of Beishamah is also Talmud Torah. Part of Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim is that even a shita that's rejected lahalacha can sometimes play a role in determining the halacha. If the situation is desperate enough, poskim can use a rejected shita in order, judiciously, they have to be careful how they use it, but they can use a rejected shita to allow them to allow that shita to play a role in determining halacha. Sometimes in a very minor way. Most often in a minor way. Most often the way they'll do it is, well, there's this das yachid that's been rejected and that das yachid that's been rejected, but when you put them all together, that's what we call a snif lahakel, that someone will write a tshuva and they'll say, well, there are five reasons to be makel over here. Reason number one is, you have this das yachid that was rejected, but it is a daya that holds its mutter, plus you have over there, you have this machlokas rishonim, okay, granted out. So that's part of Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim, that even the rejected shita, lahalacha, does help to play a role in halacha, but in this case, when it's a major shas l'chak, or a major need, we're going to use the rejected shita and say, you know what, we're going to pass in that way, because we feel that it's a desperate enough situation that we're going to rely on the rejected shita. And that's what kedayu Rabbi Shimon l'smach l'av b'shas l'chak, kedayu l'smach l'av b'shas l'chak, generally means it's such a shas l'chak, we need to rely on the rejected shita, and you're allowed to do that in halacha. How's he applying that over here? Just a second. How's he applying that over here? You have Machlokes Bavli Yerushalmi. The rule is passing like the Bavli. What's his problem though?
Nobody does it.
So, okay, nobody does it. Chaye Nefesh. Rofefes hi biyadenu. Ein atzibur yichol namaba. Technical or not technical over there? Are those technical terms? If it's ein atzibur yichol namaba, you need to rely on the Yerushalmi. If it's ein atzibur yichol namaba, shouldn't that make it that the whole Gzera doesn't apply? You don't even need a Yerushalmi. You don't need to say that anyone came and was Mevatel. It's Batel Me'elav. It doesn't apply to begin with. So Pashtus is, he's not really using that in the technical term, right, in the technical way. What it's Tzibur is Yachal Amaba. It's just that we're not so frum anymore. People aren't doing it so well anymore. But for a generation or two generations or five generations, they had no problems with it. It's hard to then say, oh, now it's Ein Tzibur Yachal Amaba. No, they were fine with it. But now it's Rofefesi, and that's what he means, that Ein Atzibur Yichol Lamaba. And therefore, that's a major enough tzorech, the fact that people aren't doing it anymore, to rely on the Yerushalmi. Is that a satisfying approach? No, that's my taitch of the approach. Now, I would submit that there are 10 other ways to read that line of the Ritva, especially since you have all these terminologies that you could say, no, well, maybe the Kedai Lismoch Alav is Lav Dafka, and the other phrases that he uses are more Dafka. Right? That was just my impression, but you're certainly not afraid to accept anything, that my reading. But if you were to accept it, good, no good?
I'm saying, is there an opportunity between using this Yahul Lismoch Alav and using the heter of Chai Nefesh? It seems like they're both like Bidyevit kind of,
No, Yachal Ismach Alav is on the Yerushalmi, which itself uses Chaye Nefesh.
Oh, okay, fine.
Right? The Yerushalmi uses Chaye Nefesh. But there is a major difference between using the Yerushalmi's Chaye Nefesh and saying that Gzeir Shein Rav Tzibir Chal Namubra, and therefore the Gzeir never applied. And that difference would be, is there any element of the Gzeir that applies? If the Gzeir never applied, so then the whole Gzeir is garbage, and then we don't listen to any of it. But if it's Chai Nefesh, so we have to look at what's Chai Nefesh, what's not Chai Nefesh, and figure out what was rescinded, what wasn't.
Could be the Ram puts the Ramban that says in every door the Chacham has to decide.
Okay, we can get to the other issue. Yeah, what do you want to say?
Working within that. I mean, he doesn't feel like he can just say, oh, it's the Gzeir Shein Rav Tzibir Chal Namubra, so it's just about the Me'elah. Like, could be he feels like I can't do that, so I have to say that, but also Yerushalmi also says some other anyway.
So he's saying he's using it as a sniff. He's right. Using this like a sniff article also. Interesting, yeah?
Both Chai Nefesh and the second one, the film that we can't do it anymore, are two things that would be subject to maybe making Zera somewhat. So since we have two of them that are both...
What do you mean making Zera somewhat?
That Zera wouldn't be both completely based on these two reasons.
Right.
So why can't we say that we use these two examples and not the Gemara and Yerushalmi?
Well, the Yerushalmi says Chai Nefesh. The Yerushalmi is synonymous to Chai Nefesh. The Yerushalmi says they got rid of it because of Chai Nefesh.
Well, then according to this, wouldn't there be a strong way to learn it that there's still elements of this theory that should still exist?
Yes. Yes. If you're relying on the Yerushalmi's Chai Nefesh, then right. Yes, absolutely. Then there's good reason to say that there are elements of the Gzeira that still exist. Absolutely. Yeah.
Is there Chai Nefesh a problem becoming... They couldn't keep it because Chai Nefesh, or is that two different things?
Okay, we're going to have to define Chai Nefesh, but I'm not sure.
Not keeping a halacha. I mean, Rove couldn't.
Is Chai Nefesh that people were desperate? Let's put it this way. If I'm at a steakhouse and they serve me a 20-ounce, 32-ounce steak, so is the bread on the table still Chai Nefesh? I'm going to walk out full. It's not going to be a problem if I don't touch the bread. What does Chai Nefesh mean? So, our inclination, at least my inclination, when you see the words, it makes it sound like almost like Pikuach Nefesh. Like, oh, you need to eat this or else you're going to die or you're going to be suffering or whatever. I'm not convinced at all that that's what it means. Chai Nefesh probably means something along the lines of this is a staple. Whatever the circumstances are in the Jewish community, or whether they could do without it or they cannot do without it, is irrelevant. It's a staple. It's a basic that people use all the time. That's it. People use it all the time. That's Chai Nefesh. What Chai Nefesh does is it doesn't make the tzorach greater in terms of the desperation. It makes the tzorach greater in terms of its typical usage. Right? It just says that it's Chai Nefesh. What Chai Nefesh tells you is if you had a Jewish bakery that was producing the same bread, it wouldn't be Chai Nefesh because you have plenty of bread. But anytime you're going to take away bread from people, you can't substitute bread with other things, as we learn every year on Pesach, right? You can't say it's just not the same when you substitute it with other things. Fake bread isn't bread.
Well, what's the motivation for Ramban to be making regarding this? Like, I understand Bikuach Nefesh, obviously it makes sense they'd want to be made cool, but is the motivation since the staple, therefore they wouldn't want to do it. I don't really understand it so much.
It's a question of how much they would want to impose on our lifestyles, on the way all people live and eat. We're going to see even bigger chidushim, right? We'll get to it, but we're going to see even bigger chidushim in terms of the Chai Nefesh might even be broader. Might even be when this is tastier than that, right? Rashba says. Shulchan Aruch Paskin said, yeah, there's a Jewish bakery in town, the bread stinks. And there's a non-Jewish bakery, and it's really good. Chai Nefesh, Rashba says. You're allowed to go to the non-Jewish bakery because of Chai Nefesh. So how do you understand Chai Nefesh in light of that? Because it tastes better? That's Chai Nefesh? So the Bach struggles with this and says, yeah, because you can't force people to eat stuff that they don't like. What do you mean? We do that all the time, don't we? Right? If someone doesn't like matzah, you can't force them to eat matzah? Of course you can force them to eat matzah. That's all the Jewish dietary laws are. So the point is that Chai Nefesh apparently is that when the Rabbanon are going to make dinim, they don't want to cramp your lifestyle too much. Yeah.
According to the Rashba, the term Chai Nefesh is dependent on where you're from. If one place loves Italian bread, then that's Chai Nefesh, and if a different place, they
love it. Yeah, yeah.
you're opposite, you could argue the opposite way also, but doesn't chai nefesh tie into chasnas? The fact that it is chai nefesh will take
absolutely. Oh, good. Okay, so chai nefesh can tie very much into chasnas, because if it's something that's such a staple, so again, chasnas, what's the real issue of chasnas? So we've discussed, chasnas is not, I'm going to marry his daughter, chasnas is, I'm going to develop an ongoing social interaction with him. Why is sadeh okay? Because it's, Rashi said, because it's a one-time thing. Chai nefesh says, this is what we always eat. So if I'm getting this stuff from a guy, I'm not just going to see him today, I'm going to see him every day. Right? That's so chai, it would be very much connected to chasnas. Okay, so that's mahalik number two in the Ritva. But yeah?
Also, does it apply to more than just pas Yisrael, chai nefesh? Is this like a new concept, or is it like a common...
Well, it's hard to apply to anything but pas.
Wait, I'm saying, why does that mean? Because it's a staple? I mean,
yeah. That's what people eat at every meal. We're not used to this concept because we don't do that anymore. Our eating habits are totally different. But yeah. That's what people eat at every meal.
But according to that, it seems like saying that if you have something in your lifestyle, which isn't really totally mutter, but since it's common in our lifestyle, it's okay. I mean, it applies to more than just bread, but it happens to be, in this case, it was bread. Meaning, is bread lav davka, it just happens to be, if you have a lifestyle in a certain way, and really it's not totally okay, I mean, it could be a heter for that. I mean, although...
Really, you know, you say on a bishlak or something like that.
Yeah, like more
than okay, but we're always assuming that pas is the chai nefesh. Yeah.
So if chai nefesh is interconnected with the other one, so
yeah,
they're opposite things. Chasnas, like
why?
For opposite things, because they're heteros for opposite things.
Why?
Because chai olam is a hetera for you to not eat the bas. For no chai olam is a
chai nefesh says
it says you can eat it because it's mutter. And the other one says you can eat it because you're worried about.
Right. So when we're saying right. Yeah, but
so how can they be
we're saying the lack of a concern.
I'm saying that's why you could opposite both ways. Chasnas. You could say chai nefesh enhances the reason of chasnas, or it takes away the issue of chasnas. I was trying to say that.
Right. So you're trying to say chai nefesh should be a chumrah, not a kula. Chai nefesh could be used as a chumrah also because it's either of it's going to make me rely on you all the more, and that's again when the Gemara said Rebbe says Kama Yafa Pazu, how delicious this bread is, why did the rabbis asser it, right? So we had that discussion, is the fact that it's better more reason to asser it or less reason to asser it? You could argue both ways. The fact that it's better means I need it more, so that maybe is less reason to ask for it, because I'm doing it because I need it, not because I want social interaction. Or you could say, no, it's more reason to ask for it, because if it's so good, I'm really going to come to interact with this guy more frequently. Okay, again, let's just bring it back down here. Mahalach number two in the Ritva was that the Yerushalmi is the only one that says that they were ever matir pasakum, we rely on the Yerushalmi b'shas adchak. Problem with this is you have to say that we pass like the Yerushalmi, and we don't. You know, we'd rather not have to say that we pass like the Yerushalmi. You're also saying that we're only passing like the Yerushalmi because our lack of observance of the mitzvos, our lack of observance of the Dinim Derabanan, sort of forced the rabbinic hand into making them pass like the Yerushalmi, which is not, you know, not something that necessarily makes us so happy. The third approach of the Ritva is totally different. He says, "V'anachon be'enai." The approach I think he says is correct. Ki b'yemei ha'morayim nagu hetar pas paltos shel goyim. That in the days of the Amorayim, everyone was ready eating it. When the Gemara had this discussion, they knew that everyone was eating bakery baked bread from non-Jews. Val ze amar Rav Kana Rabbi Yochanan, the pas ze she'elu nogin hetar lo hutra bebezdin el achronim hitirum v'chay nefesh. He says, when the Gemara makes the original statement lo hutra bebezdin, that statement is not saying it's usher. Lo hutru bebezdin. It's all where you put the emphasis. It's not lo hutru bebezdin. It's lo hutru bebezdin. Rather, it was hutra later on. You want to know when this became mutter? It wasn't bezdin. It was later that it became mutter. That's the emphasis. So the very first statement of the Gemara of lo hutru bebezdin, which we thought was an af and a raya, that the Gemara rejects the idea that they were matir pasakum, is in fact, the Ritva says, the explicit statement that they were matir pasakum. They weren't matir bebezdin, but they were matir later on. Bebezdin means the original batei din that were making these gzeros. Those guys weren't matir it. But by the time the Gemara came along, they were already matir it. And why were they matir? Because of chayi nefesh. V'talu a heter b'masha sovrna amlomer b'divir Rebbe she'tiru shanag alav heter. And the Gemara then connects that heter to the people who misunderstood Rebbe, which that's a little bit strange, because if you're going to say that the heter came along later, why do you need to connect it to Rebbe's mistaken Talmidim? But okay. V'afal b'sha yaminuk b'ta'us hara'a leslanba the Talmud pask zera shein robot zibur yicholun lamur bahi. Says the Ritva, a third approach. There is a day in the Gemara that it's mutter. The day in the Gemara that it's mutter holds very simply that the gzera was never tzibri chol namuba, and therefore the gzera was never a valid gzera; it was a totally invalid gzera to begin with. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya said, "Yeah, you know what." Someone could come along even in our generation, generations later, and be matir the pas. You don't need to be such an authority to be matir the pas, because the gzera was invalid in the first place. And the shuras hadin, says the Ritva, is you don't even need a later basin to be matir it. Because it's batal me'elav. The gzera was invalid. But out of respect. Respect for the first basin, they decided we'll go through the formality of getting a later basin to come and be matir it. Yeah.
Two things. Number one, can't that also justify the second shot? Meaning it was Darish in Xerish in a Tibiyah Namur Ba. But out of respect, they want to say we're passing on Tibiyah Shalom.
Right. The difference, though, is in the second shot, there isn't a single day in Bavli that holds that it was Mutter. That's what's revolutionary about the third shot of the Ritva is that Talmud Bavli itself holds that it's Mutter. Yeah.
We're assuming there that there's no problem with gadol b'chachmon within of another bit as in
within this third sheet.
Yeah,
because you don't need gadol b'chachmon b'minyan if the gzera was never valid to begin with. When they made a gzera and the gzera was good and it worked, and now I'm trying to uproot it, well then I better be gadol b'chachmon b'minyan. But if the gzera was a bad gzera, was flawed to begin with, you don't need gadol b'chachmon b'minyan. The gzera is garbage; doesn't work. You don't even need a Beis Din. Just as a kavod, we're gonna go through the motions of having a Beis Din come and say that it's mutter. But you don't even need that.
When the Amoraim were gave it a heter, did a Beis Din come together? Or they
yeah. So the Ritva seems to assume some Beis Din came together. Some Beis Din that was katan min arishon ma'od, that was much smaller than the original Beis Din. It doesn't matter though. They're allowed to do that. Yeah.
How do you read the mechalal? I mean, isn't that what the statement is saying? The statement is actually saying that
Beis Din
wasn't
matured. That's a good kasha. Even without the word mechlal, just the whole hemshach is hard to read. What are we trying to prove? What are we trying to prove from Rebbe's Talmidim? That they are not the real reason that it's mutter, but at least what? What exactly?
What's the story of the Gemara also, isn't it? The Ivo?
Yeah.
And he was mutter. What's the problem here? He was basically.
Okay. Right.
Kicked out.
That story where they basically kick him out of Talmud Bavli because they don't like that he ate Pasakum only makes sense if the Gzera of Pasakum at least has some substance to it. Meaning, if the whole Gzera is all gone and was never valid, so then that story makes no sense. But if the Gzera was either rescinded partially or was tzibur yichol namurba partially, and it was only other parts that ain't tzibur yichol namurba, then you can make sense of that story, because where he could have messed up isn't the parts that the tzibur was yichol namurba. It could be that was yisod machlokas. What was he doing? Could be he said, look, because the gzeir shein rov tzibur yichol namurba, the gzeir is in the garbage, we don't have to worry about it anymore. And they said, no, either it was rescinded partially, but for paspa alabayis you still have to worry about it. And how could you be makel on something like this? Right? Or it wasn't that it was rescinded, but the tzibur was yochel lamod and pas balabayis, so you shouldn't have gone and eaten it. Right? That could have been what they were arguing about.
How could Xer be batal me'elav? How would that happen? What happens?
The Chum say, I gave the example last week, I think. when the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah gets together and they say, we're making rules. When you make a chasna, you can't have more than a three-piece band, you can't have more than 250 people there. What?
Oh, they're just
and then not a single person listens. So they say, you know, it was a great idea, but nobody listened. So they're not making, I don't think they're still, I don't think they're even pretending to enforce those rules anymore. Because you sound ridiculous. If nobody listens, you're going to keep on, it could be the greatest idea in the world. But if nobody's going to listen, so then the Gzeira is worthless. Good? So that's the Ritva. Those are the three approaches of the Ritva. The Ran also holds, at least at one point in the Ran, that there's a day in our Gemara that holds that it was mutter. The Ran writes, well, let's see, there are two parts to the Ran. If you take a look at the Ran, on, well, everyone has a different printing nowadays, right? But the Kachroi Lomar, on the old printings of the Ran, it's the bottom line, Yudalad Amar Alpha Dabe Arif. Al Kachroi Lomar, from Maskana de Gemara Dilan Nami Hutar. The Maskana of our Gemara is, they were Matir Pasakum. Devade Rabbi Chalbav Rabbi Yochanan, Lo shaklu vitaru atausa ditou kala olam. And his raya is, again, we started out with five reasons say one way, three reasons say the other way. Everyone picks one and says, that's the ultimate proof. Everything else I could touch up and answer up some other way. So what does the Ran pick as his proof? The Ran says, it's the fact that the Gemara starts discussing within the day of the Tzmatir. That's all you need. That's your proof. What are you going to do with the other, the proofs on the other side? I'll answer them up some way. But that's it. It can't be that you have a shakla v'tari in the Gemara about a mistake. Shakla v'tari in the Gemara has to be about a shita, about a deya, about something that means something. So they're going to start saying, oh, what were we matir it for? Only for palter, only for sada. It doesn't make sense if no one was ever matir it. Tamidu de misa de kushu de milsa de lohut or klal. Sheikh Roy Lechalik bein ir l'sada umakam sheish papalti shalei inbo. Imisa shkol mishomer hutar inu l'toa. If the whole thing was a mistake, what chilukim are you making? It was all a big mistake, a big misunderstanding. Elavade amurayin inhu. It's a machlokas amurayin. Now, what's the problem with saying that it's a machlokas amurayin in the Gemara?
Where's
the Amora? We tried to find him, and all we found was a bunch of mistaken talmidim of Rebbe. So what does the Ran tell me? Yeah, there had to have been a machlokas amurayin over here. Rav Yossi Shrile, the Rebbe lo hitar b'pas klal, el sha'olam to'u b'kach, v'ikom en depalagale. In our Gemara records that the opinion that holds that they did not rescind the Gezerah. But there's another opinion out there. Gemara just doesn't record it. Now, what the Ran might be telling us is the way these things are transmitted in Talmud Bavli, you get bits and pieces of different conversations that went on in different Batei Medrash, and you have to put two and two together yourself sometimes. And this is one of those examples, because if the last four lines of the Gemara are clearly working within a shita that holds that it's mutter, so that shita exists, even though we don't have it in our version of the Talmud Bavli. But it exists, and the Talmud Bavli recognized it, and even came l'maskana to pask in that way. Right? More scholarly approach would be to try to figure out what were later additions from the Gaonim, and what. Right? Let's stay away from that. Right, so that's what the Ran tells me. That yeah, there is no other opinion recorded in the Gemara, but it's there. So the Ran also holds that it was hutar. Now, if it was hutar, who had to have been matirit? If someone came along and was matirit, l'chora you would need a basin that's called a b'chafam minyan to be matirit. Did they ever have that? So the Ran goes on later to say, well, maybe also Ein Rov Tzibri Chol Namaba, maybe it also wasn't really a valid Gezeira, and they and therefore, and this is a key twist, the Ran says, it was a Gezeira Shein Rov Tzibri Chol Namaba, and that's why a lesser Bezdin could be Matirit. Now we saw in the Ritva, Gezeira Shein Rov Tzibri Chol Namaba, and therefore you don't need a Bezdin to be Matirit. The Ran apparently holds, Gzeira Shein Rov Tzibur Chol Namurba, that was instituted, you do need a Beis Din, it just doesn't need to be Gadol B'Chacham Minyan. The Ritva says you don't need a Beis Din, we just did it out of Kavod. Nice way of honoring the first Beis Din. The Ran seems to be saying you do need a Beis Din, just the Beis Din doesn't need to be Gadol B'Chacham Minyan, so much so, that that he quotes the Ramban, that the Ramban said, yeah, if we get a basin together in our time, we could do it. In times of the Rishonim already, Ramban is saying, if we got a basin together, obviously assuming that it wasn't already nullified before that point, but the point is that you still need a basin, but the basin, there's no qualification of what level the basin really needs to be on, other than that they somehow represent the das of Klal Yisrael of that generation. Yeah?
I don't understand. If you say that someone is matir, then why does the Ran say you need a basin? Why does it end with the Ritva, the Ran, the Ramban? Why do they say that if the Ran and the Ritva hold?
No, who was matir it? Because someone had to be matir it.
So who was it?
It wasn't Rebbe's grandson, so it must have been someone later who clearly was not Gadol B'Chacham of Minyan. Because we have this concept of Yiridas Hadaros, so it almost never happens. You don't really have Bate Din greater than Rebbe's Beis Din nowadays. You don't have that. So if you don't have it, you're not going to find anyone qualified. So the Ran says, you don't need anybody qualified, it's not so critical. So that's the Ran's little twist. I mean, that's really like Shitas HaTosfos, that it's Gzeresh Ein Rav Tzibur Chol Lamed Ba, like the Ritva's third Shita Ein Rav Tzibur Chol Lamed Ba, with a little twist, that you still need a Beis Din. The Rush, also with a little twist. The Rush writes, what does it mean, Ein Rav Tzibur Chol Lamed Ba? Rav Tzibur where? I always have this question. The community standards. Are the kashra standards of the community up to snuff with what the community would expect? Which community? The Far Rockaway community, the Lawrence community, the North Woodmere community? Which community? How do you define the community? So, Ein Rov HaTzibur Yichol Lamud Ba. So the Rush says that there is a possibility that they came out with this gezeira, not to make chasnas with more than 250 people and more than whatever the rules were. And there are communities in Eretz Yisrael that never did that anyway. And they had no problem with it. They said, 250? Who has that many people at a wedding? Right? And there are people that had no problem keeping those gzeros. So what about the communities that didn't have a problem with it? Is the gzera not binding on them? Do we say because it was meant for all of Klal Yisrael and not all of Klal Yisrael could handle it, therefore the whole gzera is null and void on everybody? Or do you say, let's go community by community? This community, it worked. That one, it didn't work. The one that didn't work for, okay, we're not going to hold them to it. The one that it did work for, we're going to hold them to it. So says the Rush, Paslo hutra bebezin shlo tita lomar, kima shiesh mekomo sha'ochlin pashalovit kochavim. A person could have easily looked at what the Jewish community does and says, and said, there are some places that eat pashalovit kochavim, alma hutra bebezin v'temutaris b'kal makam. Oh, it must be that some basin came along and was matirid for everybody. Otherwise, why would some communities be allowed to do it and other communities not? So says the Rush, that's what a person would think. That's where Rav Kahana has to say, no, a basin was never matirid. But the Rush, very similar to what the Ran said before, a basin was never matirid, but it is mutter. You know why? Because it was gzeira shein rov tzibur chol lamed ba in some places. And that's why those places are allowed to continue reading Pasachim. Lahachi kam Rav Yochanan lo hutra bebezdin, ubi mekomu shenogu bo heter, lo pashat sham isuro. The places where the Noah heter, it's because the Isser never took hold in those places. Val zeh samcha gedoylem, shlo asro sol lebnei medinasan, shenogu bo heter. And that's what everyone was samichan, that they assume every single Rishon who says, everyone needs Pasach in my community, assumed that their community was one of those communities that it never took hold in. We have yet to find the community that it did take hold in, but everyone is allowed to assume for themselves, my community must be the one that it didn't take hold in. But he assumes that it could be Yesh V'Yesh, that you could divide up Klal Yisrael in such a way. Those are the Deos and Rishon as far as I know them. Now in terms of Halacha, that's how to read the Gemara. That's okay, what does Talmud Bavli say? So we know that there are some Rishonim that hold Talmud Bavli never has a daya that says that it's mutter, and there are Rishonim that say Talmud Bavli absolutely yes has a daya that says that it's mutter. And if Talmud Bavli has a daya that says that it's mutter, that's only for, the Gemara makes two qualifications, afim on the Omar, that it's mutter, that's only besada, and it's also only if it's a palter, when there's no palter Yisrael. When there's no palter Yisrael. So do you need both requirements or only one requirement? La halacha. So look at the Rambam. Rambam writes, somewhere here, source number 8, the Rambam writes, Hilchos Machos, Perek Yud Zayin, Halacha Tes, Yesh sham dvar macher masros an chacham mafpi shein leisur an ikur min haTorah. Gazral ein kedei l'strachik min haAkum. There are certain gzeros Rabbanim made that have nothing to do with any din d'oraisa, so that we don't mix in with the non-Jews. Ve'elu hein, and they include isur lechol pitan, the isur to eat their bread. And then the Rambam goes on a couple of halachas later. Even though it's usur to eat their bread, yesh mekomos shemekilim b'davar velokchin pas hanachtom haAkum. B'makom she'in shom nachto Yisrael u'besade mepreshu shasad chak. What's the Rambam saying? Those heterim that we have, palter, when there's no palter Yisrael, sade, you need both. Not only that, you can only even use those if it's also shasad chak, and even that's not for all of Klal Yisrael. The Rambam seems to be like a big mush of all the different shitos. We just have to figure out how exactly, which elements of each of the Rishonim he took to arrive at his shita, and I promise we're really going to get to the halacha of Bli Neder. Tomorrow we're going to start getting to the halacha and seeing how this plays out in Shulchan Aruch, but I think this was, even though it's a little bit drier to have a shiur like this, I think it's necessary just to know how, what the issues are in the Gemara and how the Rishonim dealt with it, and we'll see how that will enrich our understanding of the halacha. 10 minute halacha shiur will be after Mark.